Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Daily Wager. Daily Wager is a new podcast for all your information on nightly matchups. Listen every weekday afternoon for the latest info on the biggest games and plays. Listen to Daily Wager as well at the right time wherever you get your podcast. Also, if there were a bracket of my favorite sports traditions, filling out a bracket would be the champion of that bracket. I love taking all my friends and family in ESPN Tournament Challenge and beating every single one of them. Sign up now for ESPN Tournament Challenge at ESPN.com/bracket. And this year, you can boost your bracket with ESPN Plus. Use Bracket Predictor to analyze each matchup, get recommended picks one game at a time, and import your picks directly into ESPN's Tournament Challenge. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Just a reminder for people, we are now going 3 days a week with The Right Time. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Fridays are Foxworth Fridays with Dominique Foxworth. Wednesdays are going to be like the Thursdays were, where we have our interview guests. And joining us now, check them out on First Things First, mornings on FS1. Nick Wright, what's going on, man?
Bo! Definitely this will end soon, but this is the platform in which I actually get to see you the most, aside from on television as opposed to in person. When I say it'll end soon, not my appearances on The Right Time, but me not seeing you in person. But it's great to talk to you, my friend.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, this has been killing me. It's been a year. It's your fault. If you had not moved from 4 blocks away from me to like 30 blocks away from me, I'd come hang out on the porch. Post up.
Yeah, I still feel like it's actually, I'm going to put first place fault the pandemic, second place fault the fact that 30 blocks is too long of a city bike ride for you to manage, third place fault my own fault, because even when you lived 4 blocks from me, every single time we saw each other is because you came to me, because the year's obviously been very difficult for a lot of people for a million reasons. Everyone's like, man, I'm just stuck in the house all day. And I'm thinking, that was me pre-COVID. I just don't go anywhere. So that part I'm used to.
Yeah, I have to admit that the being at home by myself thing has not broken me like it's broken a lot of other people. And it makes me wonder if I'm a sociopath.
Yeah, introvert, sociopath, where does the line start, yeah. The line end? Some combination, yeah, of the two, something like that. But I'm excited to be here. It's great to be here. I am glad the last football game we watched together was the greatest sports experience of my life. And you were not here for the worst sports experience of my life. So I'm glad you have that memory of us together.
By the way, my bike, the last time I rode it was when I rode to your house on your daughter's birthday, and I caught a flat and had to get a ride home, and I still have the bike laying over here because it is flat, because winter came around, and I was like, okay, I guess I'm out of this business. Now, let me tell you people this thing about the Super Bowl. This is a true story. I watched the first half of the Super Bowl last year at a spot in Brooklyn, and the 49ers were up. It was not looking great for the Chiefs. I figured my man Nick might need a little support, so me and my brother, we rode out. We go over to Nick's house. And maybe we were the good luck charms. I'm not sure. The Chiefs came back, and I got to experience the joy of Nick watching his favorite team win a Super Bowl while the women in his house tried his best to not find him to be ridiculous as they were watching, the sheer unfettered joy. During this year's Super Bowl, because I could not make it over, once I realized, oh, man, this isn't going right, I sent a text to your wife that said, is he okay? And the response was simply, no.
Yeah, I wasn't. I wasn't okay. I mentioned to you off the air before we got going that once we're able to see each other again, I was going to try to hire you to do some SAT tutoring for my older daughter, who's a sophomore in high school. And that's not because she's not good at the SATs. It's because since she no longer has a college fund, I think she's going to need some type of scholarship. And I feel like you can expertly assist in that.
Dude, you gotta realize, I watched you on that IG Live right before the Super Bowl. I got on right at the end. and you would sit in your garage smoking one of them horrible Black and Milds.
Yeah.
And you were just like, all right, we're going to win this. We're going to win this. And then the game started, and I saw, whoa, is that Mike Remmer starting that left tackle?
Yeah,
uh-oh, we got a problem. And then
It was a problem. Listen, it was not fun to watch. It was just a perfect storm of all the things you fear. Like, the offensive line couldn't protect him. Andy Reid, who at this point is a made man, so I can't, it's not fair for me to criticize him, but the ghosts of Christmas past, time management wise, at the end of the first half, I mean, that really did it. You end up not feeling this way because they got blown out, but that game was 14-6, and the Bucs were basically kneeling on the ball, and it was going to be Chiefs ball, down 8, start the second half, okay, and then they dared Tom Brady to drive him down the field, and Tom Brady kind of drove him down the field. Carl Cheffers drove him the rest of the way with some very, you know, questionable
that would be the ref.
DPIs. And but listen, I, you know, I've investigated the rule book, and it's my mistake for not realizing this, that starting with the final possession against the Packers and ending with the first half of the Super Bowl, the official rule book did state that defensive pass interference is defined by a number of things and any Tom Brady incompletion. I was like, oh, I should have known. I should have realized that one. And so, yeah, no, it wasn't fun. And the next few weeks of, you know, liquidating assets to pay debts wasn't fun either. But we're over it now. We're moving forward. You know, we just spent $80 million on a guard that I can't see how that doesn't go well. I do have to tell you, your colleague Adam Schefter hit me with the ultimate okey-doke this morning. Can I tell you what happened?
Please do.
All right, so I like the Joe Tooney signing, but the long history of offensive linemen being awesome in New England, getting a bunch of money, and then somewhere else, and not being awesome, Nate Solder, Trent Brown, like the only guy who I think has been great in multiple places is Mankins. I think it was Logan Mankins. I think that's who it was. Maybe I'm wrong. And so I said on the show, I like Tooney, but I would really like if they paired it with Trent Williams. That Trent Williams is the best left tackle, arguably, in football. This morning, I wake up around 4:15. Shortly after I wake up, I get a alert on my phone because I have Schefter set to alerts for free agency. And Twitter alerts only give you like the first three lines of the tweet, and then you've got to go into the app. Here are the first three lines of Adam Schefter's tweet around 4 a.m. Trent Williams also discussed deals with the Chiefs and the Bears. The Chiefs wound up signing. And I'm like, oh my God, we got him. And I click on the tweet and it says, the Chiefs wound up signing Joe Tooney. I'm like, I knew that. The Bears signed Dalton and Ifedi, ensuring the Niners would make Williams the highest paid offense. It's like, God, dog it. So still rebuilding the offensive line. Got to figure that out. But other than that, I'm very bullish about my beloved Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I got to say, with the Chiefs line, I was like, okay, I think people are overreacting a little bit about the offensive line. All those guys were hurt. It wasn't like the actual situation. And then I realized, wait, the guys that I'm talking about also are not coming back. Schwartz is not coming back. Fisher is not coming back. But Trapper Jean, MD, not Trapper John, Trapper Jean, yeah. He yep. will be returning from Canada after saving lives. So you got that?
So he's back. You've got Tooney not back. I imagine they'll sign a tackle and then probably use their first round pick on a tackle and then see what happens. You know, it's funny how one game can just change perceptions of things. Had the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, let's just say Fisher doesn't pop his Achilles in the game against the Bills. If he didn't pop his Achilles, he'd have been back, and the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. I wanted them to spend their first-round pick trading for Odell. That's what I wanted. I was like, let's just triple down on the offense, like the skill position guys. Now it feels like you're being negligent if you don't spend all your available resources on remaking your offensive line. They might end up getting a center, though, because the Raiders had the best offensive line in football and then got rid of everybody. And the Hudson thing is perplexing. Not to be too nerdy on your podcast, Rodney Hudson on the Raiders for this upcoming season was going to cost them $13 million against the cap. By cutting him, he costs $15 million against the cap. Don't understand that move. And he's a really good player, but he got drafted by Kansas City. He played in KC, so maybe he comes back and that would help him a ton.
Now, let's talk about the Bucks and Tom Brady for a second, because I feel like you are here with me on this Tom Brady thing, where I swear up and down I'm still right about Tom Brady. They just keep on winning, and it winds up making me look wrong. Like, the Super Bowl, he played pretty well. Up until that point in the playoffs, he had not played well. Like, the defense had gotten them through up until that point. Don't nobody want to hear that, man, right? Like, you and I are the Hannibal Buress meme. Why are you booing me? I'm right. I swear I am. Like, every year people just assume the Tom Brady thing's going to come around next year. I'm like, you can't keep betting on an old man like this. And the old man has, in fact, slipped. But they just won the Super Bowl and they doubled down on it and it don't matter.
Do you know how much better your and my life are if people should go back and watch, not Bucks Packers, not that game where Brady threw 3 second half interceptions, not Bucks Saints where Brady tried to throw 2 second half interceptions but then Drew Brees melted in front of us. Go back and watch Bucks Washington. When Heinicke has the ball in the fourth quarter with a chance to take the lead. Like, oh my God! That almost happened! Heinicke! It almost went that Brady lost to Tannehill in the round one and then lost to Heinicke in round one in back-to-back years. Instead, it's that he beat Brees, beat Rodgers, and then beat Mahomes and has 7 rings. I can't get over it.
That's what I'm saying. Why are you booing me? I'm right. Like, and I forget about this because, like, I knew you at the time, but we weren't as close as we are now. But this game happened in Kansas City, 2014, the Monday night game, where Kansas City destroyed them 42-14. And Brady looked absolutely cooked, and Garoppolo had come in the game and looked all right. Yep. And I'll never forget, man, me and Dan got on HQ. And it was just the demise of the Patriots. This is what it looks like when the old man falls off. All of those things. That was 7 years ago.
It was 7 years ago. Oh, my God. Give them credit because you're just in enough of these moments that the breaks go your way. There's just so few of the breaks that have gone against them. Like, obviously, the helmet catch is a break that went against them. There's no doubt about that. But aside from that, one of the Super Bowls, the one, you know, the time they beat Mahomes, threw a pick to lose the game, and Dee Ford's offsides. And then you're in the Super Bowl, and your opposition scores 3 points, and you peel a ring there. Another of the Super Bowls, obviously, is the Marshawn, the Seahawks. And while he was brilliant in the comeback against the Falcons, if they simply, after the Julio Jones catch, take knees, they're kicking a field goal to go up 11, and that one's over. I don't want to talk about Tom Brady anymore.
No,
I just don't.
No, you missed the biggest break, maybe, that like could kind of alter the course of NFL history in some ways, if you think about it. Somehow this play gets forgotten. The interception San Diego had in 06 in the division round when they were up and then fumbled.
Yeah.
Right? Marty Schottenheimer doesn't get fired after that season. Those Chargers definitely, I think, win the Super Bowl because they would have eaten Peyton Manning's lunch. Like, that was the exact kind of team and defense. Hell, they done it before to him, right? A 3-4 defense with all. They were the most talented team in the league, and they had it. And they fumbled that interception. People are like, yeah, it was 6 minutes left. Yeah, it was 6 minutes left, but that game was about to be over, right? It was going to be a wrap.
And I thought you were going to say, and then the way the whole thing started with, you know, the bane of our friend Mr. Ascot, Charles Woodson's existence, the Tuck Rule.
Yes.
I just all of it.
Have I told you my story about how I didn't see the Tuck Rule?
No.
All right, so I was living in L.A. at the time. AKA the brokest I've ever been in my life.
You were living in Los Angeles?
Well, not LA, but you know, when I was in grad school.
You're living in Southern California.
Yeah,
yep,
Southern California, yes. Yeah, and I did not live in LA. It's important. Key distinction. All right, so I'm there, and I had just gotten back from Christmas break, and I had just gotten my electricity turned back on. And so I'm in there, I turn on the television, and that game was on Channel 2. Keep in mind, I did not have cable at this point in my life.
So it was
bunny ears.
Two. Yeah.
So it's Channel 2, and you know how snowy Channel 2 can be. So I got all the TV snow, and then it was all the snow. I had to turn the game off. I couldn't even watch it. Like, these kids out here don't know nothing about having to catch the TV stations out to air. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't have no foil. Like, I couldn't even put no foil on the end to try to exacerbate the situation. And I did not see it because I could not watch the game because I could not see because it was so much snow.
That's amazing.
And in that moment, we obviously didn't know what was, you know, yet to come. But now we know, and it's still happening.
But you know what I got to give him credit for? These guys all like him. And you and I both know that is not typically the case with the quarterback at the front. Like, not that everybody hates them, but the across-the-board way that people like Tom Brady and the accessibility that they have to him, I do have to admit, that is incredibly rare. Like, as if I was him, I wouldn't know half those dudes' names.
I think that he is truly a great teammate, and I don't think there's any denying that. And I'm going to add something else to it. What I find most impressive about him, and then for the love of God, can we talk about something else? What I find most impressive about him is that he's not bored with this. So, you know, I'll use you and me as an example. You and I have not been doing our respective careers for anything close to 20 years. And I think both of us have found at different times in our careers the need for some type of alternative intellectual stimulation in order to not get bored with what we're doing, even though we love what we do. Take LeBron, maybe a more apropos comparison. LeBron obviously still works his ass off at basketball, you know what I mean, and stays in peak condition, all of that. But he has a lot of other projects and things he's involved in to stay kind of intellectually stimulated. It would appear Brady, I know he has the TB12 stuff, but that's all folded into football. It would appear this is all he cares about.
Right.
And I think that is when you were considered, and he's not chasing any, you know, LeBron, people say he's chasing the ghost of Michael Jordan. There's no ghost for Brady to chase. He finished that a long time ago, and he still is this interested in playing, which when you have that much money and that much opportunity, I find fascinating.
Yeah, I do find it interesting. Like, and I push off my inclination to then wonder, well, damn, maybe he just ain't that bright. You know, like, I push that out the way, right? Like, I'm going to assume that he's a very bright man who just focuses all his brightness on the stupid game, right? Like, maybe that's what this is. But I always wonder with him for football. I once saw this quick little clip of Keith Richards once, and he's got an acoustic guitar on his lap, and he's really just going through all these, like, few notes, few scales, like, different things, and he's just saying, looking at the guitar and just like, I don't know how anybody could ever get bored with this, right? Because he's like, there's always a new combination of sounds, you know, something that I could come up with, right? That's six strings and a board, right? I guess that is for Tom Brady. Like, that's what this is for him. Is like, I can always find some new wrinkle in this. And I'll also give him this. Normally, when we talk about these guys who are as good as he is and they go to another team, they don't ever go to one that's as loaded as the one that he showed up on. Like, like, of all the things in the world, he looked around and was like, there's no other place I would ever consider going other than here. They have everything. And what they didn't have was an offensive line situation. And they went and drafted the right one there. And then, boom, we're here. Leonard Fournette. Yeah, that seems like a good idea. Everybody thinks he's cooked, even though he's like 25. Come in. That worked.
Yep.
Hey, my wayward friend Antonio Brown, if he stays at my house, can he come play for us?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Bring him in, too.
Gronk, too. And Gronk, yeah, all of it.
But I think the big thing with Brown is, like, he's a number three receiver at this point in his career, and he was a number three receiver on that team and was good with it. Now, granted, he ain't have no leverage, but we didn't hear a word from Antonio Brown.
Yep. As far as the football stuff, a model citizen. I am curious to see what type of market he has and where he goes. I think it'll be Baltimore. Like, that's the one that makes sense to me. Because I don't think Tampa can spend more money at the receiver position. And I don't think they need to. They got three tight ends. Evans is a great player. They franchise Godwin. Scotty Miller is a good player. Yeah. And they've got the kid, Tyler Johnson, who all I know about him is that unbelievable third down catch he made against Green Bay. But he seems like a fine fourth or fifth option. So I don't know that I think AB will be back.
Yeah.
And I wonder where Fournette will go. But they brought everyone else back. They got Shaq back.
I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. But I guess if Tom want him back, he'll be back. To the point where Antonio Brown might even take less money because Tom Brady says so. I think Antonio Brown said he was watching them Tony Robbins tapes. Tom Brady might be his new Tony Robbins. Yeah. I can 100% see that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let me ask you this about free agency. This is the funniest thing in the world to me. What would you do? And for people who don't know the history of the Kansas City Chiefs, they've had some pretty good quarterbacks over time, but Mahomes was the first-round pick they had at quarterback in 24 years, right? Like, you guys have been kind of figuring it out at quarterback before you got Jordan. 34, that's right, I'm sorry.
Blackledge.
Yeah. You guys have been figuring out how to make it work. How would you feel if your favorite team stood up before the world and said, we have signed our starting quarterback, and his name is Andy Dalton?
Well,
because that just happened.
I would feel infinitely worse about it. The previous offseason, they had the opportunity to do that for less money, and instead they were like, let's give Nick Foles $21 million guaranteed and a fourth-round pick to do it, and then they went and signed Andy Dalton. Like, it feels to me, the Bears, though, it really has been. You know, they've never had a quarterback throw for 4,000 yards. They've never had a quarterback throw for 30 touchdowns. The highest quarterback rating in their franchise's history is Mitch Trubisky. And the best quarterback they've had in the last 70 years is Jay Cutler. So, like, maybe they're just never supposed to have a quarterback. But the Dalton thing has to be such a bummer for that team, that city, for everyone involved.
The first bummer is you should have kept Mitch. Like, if you give me the option of Trubisky or Andy Dalton, I'd rather pay Trubisky $20 million than pay Dalton $10.
Oh, wow. Do you think Trubisky, what do you think he's going to get? And where is he going to go?
I have no idea. Like, I understand why he couldn't come back to Chicago, because you couldn't just do that to the people, right? Like, when the people check out on something, you also have to check out on it, no matter what. I don't think he's completely irredeemable, right? Like, I don't think he's good. I don't think he's going to be, like, somebody's star. But I don't think that he's a dude where, like, I don't think he is terrible. I just don't think he is good. If he hadn't been taken with the number two pick, I think people would view him a little bit differently. I think they used him terribly there because you need to put him on the move. And they just looked at him and was like, what do you mean? He's white, right? And so they never really got around to handling him in the proper way. I felt like Andy Reid put Alex Smith on the move more than the Bears put Trubisky on the move. And that just didn't make no sense, right? So now where does he go? No idea. Because Tyrod Taylor's getting $12 million. Ryan Fitzpatrick is getting $10 million. If I'm Washington, I would have rather had Trubisky than have Ryan Fitzpatrick. The difference is when Ryan Fitzpatrick does dumb stuff, it's fun to people, right? And so we've created this whole thing around Fitzmagic. So Trubisky gonna wind up backing up somebody, but he's gonna wind up being like Jameis was, like, so I get $1 million and everybody else gets, you know, all of this.
Here would be my question. I wonder if Trubisky ends up in New England as a camp competition for Cam, because Cam's contract is the only way he makes any money is if he makes the team. That's how they set it up. And I'm not certain they know he's going to make the team. And so I think Trubisky, maybe they buy low on him.
I think I would expect the Patriots to make a strong play for Deshaun Watson. But here's the thing with Watson. He's going to be a Houston Texan.
What do you mean?
Unless somebody offers them like 4 first-round picks, they ain't trading him. I think they are willing to put him on ice, start Tyrod Taylor this year, and they just going to wait this out. Because I don't think for the Texans, it ain't just the Texans that don't want to trade Watson. There are 31 other owners who are like, you got to hold this line. Like, we can't have this where people are just walking up asking to be traded and then they get it.
So a guy, I think you know him, he's one of my closest friends. He used to host radio in Houston, now he does stuff nationally, and he's actually also an attorney. Mike Meltzer had a really interesting Twitter thread a month or so ago about this exact concept, which is, if the Texans trade Deshaun, it totally changes the power dynamics between owners and players almost irreparably, and the harm it would do in the owner's eyes to their position as far as power over the players, and how Cal McNair could almost single-handedly, you know, set ownership in the NFL back. With that said, I do think he's going to get traded. I do think it'll be on draft day or in the days leading up to it, because I just think the Jets or the Dolphins are going to say, you guys can sell this because you're going to have your franchise quarterback coming out of it. The reason that I thought, you know, for to talk about Russell Wilson for a moment, his list was such a terrible list, was aside from Dallas, none of those teams could provide Seattle with a franchise quarterback or the pick to get a franchise quarterback. And I don't think anyone's trading one of these guys without that coming back. But if the Jets can say, you can have the second pick, our next three first rounders, because on draft day you can trade then an extra year right into the future, and Quinnen Williams, then I think you say, okay, we got five first-round picks. One was a top-five pick in Quinnen Williams. One was the second pick of the draft and whatever else they have. I think that's sellable to your fan base. And I think the Texans know they're screwed with Deshaun. That thing was burnt to the ground anyway.
Right, see, and that's my thing why I don't think they have urgency to trade him. It's the Ralph Kiner situation. We finished last with you, we'll finish last without you, right? Like, I think they will hold on to him unless somebody like 100% backs up the truck. But they have no reason whatsoever to actually trade him. Now, Mike, it's funny. Mike Meltzer had put something on Twitter once. He was like, I don't understand why they put Cal McNair in charge of the Texans when they could have put this other son in charge of the Texans, this dude, Carey. And Carey's resume was like real strong on the oil side and all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, they put Cal on the job that nobody can mess up. Like, he can mess up the franchise, but he can't mess up the money. They could not put this dude, who I've just heard across the board, the issue that people say they have with him is that he's simply not bright. Like, I mean, people aren't even mean about it. When they, like, the people who are around this, when they talk about him, they seem to like him, but they just simply don't believe that he's bright. And now he's in charge of the team, and everything's going to hell, and they can't figure out what to do, but he cannot trade Deshaun Watson unless he gets everything. Like, I was thinking about this. Can you name a legitimate franchise quarterback, a legitimate one, that's been traded, like, anywhere near, like, young, in their 20s? I can't think of a single one.
No, there isn't one. The closest thing is Cutler.
Right, and that was Jay Cutler, right? Where right. Josh McDaniels, bless his heart, was ahead of us.
Yep.
He's like, nah, trust me, guys, this ain't gonna work.
Correct. Can I take this conversation in a totally different direction, because this is where my brain went for a moment? Because I was about to say, he would be without question the greatest asset that's ever been traded in the history of the NFL, as far as age, position, all of it.
Right.
The direction I want to take the question is this. Speaking of Twitter threads, I read a Twitter thread about how it's highly problematic to refer to any human being as an asset. And I consider myself incredibly open-minded and on the right side, or I try to be on the right side of almost all of these issues. I also don't know that I have the language. Like, A, do you agree with that? That when we're talking about sports, we should never use the term asset unless we're talking about, like, not a human, like a draft pick,
right,
is a future asset. And B, if you do agree with it, what am I supposed to say? I try to listen, but I'm like, I feel boxed in. I don't know what to do.
I do agree, and I don't know what else to say. Like, okay. it is, you know what I mean? Like, that's, it's that place, because I hear it. I also think part of it is the people that you hear refer to players as assets are like 100% white, right? Like, it's the people who exist in the media space who talk about that are typically white, and the people in the fan space who typically think in these terms tend to be white. So there's like this uncomfortable feeling that kind of comes there. And especially with football, how quickly and easily we just kind of dispose of the humanity of these dudes, you know, playing this blood sport and all of that. But while it is the language of the boss, we are talking about this from the perspective of the boss. You know?
Right.
So I think this is probably the best way to put it. It is problematic to refer to these people as assets. And this is a problematic game.
In the terms of, you know, running a team, what they are pieces on a chessboard. Is that less problematic? I don't know. But they are certainly, while they are obviously fully formed, valuable human beings, when it comes to their relationship with their teams, that is not how they're viewed. Right. And so I think there are certain language things that are super easy to just change. I haven't gotten used to it yet, but like the NBA, it's like governors, not owners. Okay,
right.
That's like an easy word change, even if it's going to take, it's like, you know, my dad calling them the Baltimore Colts still.
Right.
Like, I'm going to have to, like, retrain myself on that. But, or me still calling them the Oakland Raiders. I'll just have to retrain myself on that. But some of these other things, like, I do think one of the things that happens in the media, and you've talked about this before, but I find it interesting, is the more people such as myself that get prominent media jobs. And when I say such as myself, I mean people that disabused themselves very young of any notion that I would ever be a pro. But I still to this day think one day I might be a GM. Like, leads us to kind of talking in these terms. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, almost every little kid growing up, there was a point in time I was like, I'm going to be in the NBA. I think I've told you this story. I cried. My dad reminds me when I was 8 or 9 years old in the backseat of the car, he said, all of a sudden, he's like, why are you crying? And he claims that I had a Moses Malone card, like basketball card in my hand, and I was looking on the back of it. And I didn't know how great Moses Malone was, obviously. He's like, what's wrong? I was like, I'm worried that when I make the NBA, I'm going to get traded a lot like Moses Malone did. So, like, so I really thought I was going to be a pro when I was very young. But then at, like, 12 years old, I realized, all right, Nick, that's probably not going to happen. So then I just started thinking in terms of, like, what I could be, which is, like, what I obviously could run a team. And so I think that leads to a lot of the discussion the way it is. But I hadn't told you that Moses Malone story?
No, that is amazing. But that is, the language of it is hard.
I don't know the best way to put it. Like, I do think that there's a way to talk about it. Like, I feel like there's a greater warmth if I were to say Watson is too good for them to just give away, right? It kind of makes the point without having to get so specific. Because I also think that there is a segment of people that led to this being common in the lexicon who just like the sound of, like, they like how they sound to being on TV talking about it wherever. Like, oh, you've got, like, they like sounding like the professionals. They're doing, like, GM cosplay. And
that's
then that
true.
Just became what everybody else did. And so I think that's part of it.
But it's also just, like, because language is, you know, that's the currency in which I, you know, we traffic.
Right.
There is a different, if I were to say Deshaun Watson could be the best player ever traded, it's like, no, Randy Moss was traded.
Right. Totally get it.
But when you're talking about value, position, age, he would be the best combination of that. What's the word for that? I don't know.
Yeah, it's tricky. It just sounds cold. But you just kind of halfway touched into something a little bit that I had forgotten I wanted to bring up, but then I wanted to bring up. I told Dan this. There's a great, you did a great interview with a friend of mine, and I told him, and I mean this, of people who do our job, you are better at talking about yourself than anybody that I can think of. I mean this in the sense of not just talking about, like, you know, things about you, like stories and those kinds of things, whatever, but like talking about your life and talking about where you've come and the people and everything else and talking about how good you are. You are better at this, I think, than anybody else. Like, I don't know if anybody else can be as endearing while telling everybody, no, I'm better than everybody in this industry but like two people. And I hear you and I'm like, nah, he means that though. Like, you gotta understand that.
I appreciate that. I think that in these types of settings, it's obviously very different than doing the TV show, but in these types of settings where I am totally transparent about basically the fact that I am self-aware of my, what I would consider character flaws or vices or issues, while also being self-assured about who I am and where I am, and I think adding to it that I have a very unique, you know, blow-by-blow history. Like, if you were to just, what's today, March 17th? If you could take, like, a snapshot of, like, what I was doing on March 17th, starting on March 17th, 1998, 99, 2000, it would be like, wait, he looks totally different. Wait, where's he living? Wait, who's right. he around? And so I think that kind of helps. I appreciate the compliment, obviously. I think there are quirks of me that are very likable because there is like they're relatable to people that I enjoy the opportunity to, you know, tell people about that I don't think they get from seeing me on television pretend to be a GM.
Right. Have you, I mean, you've obviously read it before. I'm assuming it was some indie paper in Kansas City did a long thing on you many, many, many years ago that I Googled up and read once. And one, it's like 5,000 words or something crazy, right? Like it is, it is like a magnum opus of things. And I guess it's like, I read it like it was about at least 10 years ago, right? Like I it may have been before the Whitlock.
It was a decade ago. Just over.
What seemed to be very clear to me from reading it was that dude got in there and started talking to you and hanging out with you, and suddenly he realized he had way more of a story than he realized he was going to have when he got in there, and then it kept going, and then it kept going, and then you blast the whole city and basically make it clear that I'm here to sun everyone in Kansas City media. And the line I remember reading in it, though, was, it was just like, objectively speaking, I have a better show than everybody else that's here. But what was interesting to me about it is, A, considering that you were like in your early 20s when you said it or did it, but two, I could hear you saying it and I knew you and I knew the game. And I'm thinking to myself, that's probably 100% true. And it seemed that as the dude was writing the story, he ultimately came to the conclusion like, no, actually, I think he's right about this stuff.
I've got that article framed on my wall, or the newspaper it was in, because for a number of reasons. One is,
I mean, you called your shot, basically.
Well, right. I sound self-congratulatory, but I was on the second-rate radio station in town. It had never beaten the Heritage station, and we got our teeth kicked in the ratings, no matter who was there. And we had some great hosts there. Whitlock was there. And he used to be a great radio host. He got his teeth kicked in. Damon Amendolara, who does a national show for CBS now and is a brilliant radio host. He was there. He would get beaten. Didn't get his teeth kicked in, but he'd get beaten by the other show. And after me, by the way, Danny Parkins was there. Danny actually won and now is in Chicago. Carrington Harrison's there now. I had a long list of really, really talented people. But I said, I was like, listen, I'm going to beat this Keatsman guy. And that'll be step one, and then I'm going to go do these other things. What I regret about that piece was he didn't misquote me, but some of the quotes early are so misleading because, like, the lead of it is sitting in Nick Wright's living room listening. And by the way, he throws shade in the very beginning because he says sitting in Nick Wright's townhouse living room, which is like reminding the audience, like, this dude's not that successful because he lives in a townhouse outside of Kansas City. And he's like listening to him talk about how smart he is. And it's like, how'd you do on the SATs? Crushed them. What would you be doing if you didn't do this? Lawyer. Where would you have gone to college? Harvard. And those things were said, but the context of them are not the way they were presented. It's like,
right.
If you weren't a talk show host, what would you be? I'm like, well, my whole, you know, my dad and my sister are lawyers, and, you know, I like to talk for a living, so I probably, you know, would have been an attorney. You know, did you ever think of a school other than Syracuse? I'm like, no, I was always dead set on Syracuse, but both of my parents have MBAs from Harvard. So that's probably where I would have gone. The follow-up there is, you think you would have gotten into Harvard? Like, yeah, I think I would have. I think the legacy thing would have helped. And he was like, well, legacy alone wouldn't get it. And I was like, well, if I'm going to be honest, like, he was like, were you a great student? I was like, I was a good student, but I crushed the SATs, so I think I'd have been in. Like, that was the context of it. And then it's like the opening paragraph, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, oh, my God, never trust a journalist. I thought this guy was my friend. Just absolutely just makes me look like the most arrogant man in the world. I love that article. I love that picture. Magazine doesn't exist anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, it was just interesting for me to read, like I say, as person who knew you. And I was like, nah, he kind of got this. He just doesn't understand what's going on. Like, he didn't have time to get used to what it was. But I was like, oh, no. He kind of gets what this thing is.
My wife, who at the time was my girlfriend, I don't even know if she wasn't my fiance yet. Maybe she was, but she was certainly wasn't my wife yet. She was so mad at that guy. so to this day. She was like, we invited him into our home because he went out drinking with us. He spent a week with me. Like, and I really thought it was going to be, and it wasn't like a hit piece, but it also, it was what it was. But hey, you know, that's the reason you don't let Mina Kimes spend a week getting to know you. She might take you down.
Nah, your people, like, no matter who you are, man, your people are the harshest critics of anything that's written about you. Anything in the world. Like, it's hard for somebody to write something about me that actually gets me mad. But like, the people who consistently go at me for no reason, man, my brother ready to run up on a couple people. Like, legit. My dad's been ready to run up on some people. My dad, 84 years old. My dad been ready to run up on some people over some of this stuff.
Well, I know Moomba, your brother, is because I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Occasionally, I'm on Twitter, and I'm like, why am I seeing this tweet? And it's because he has responded to it, just attacking the person. And I'm like, oh, that's why I'm seeing this tweet.
Yeah, nah, man, your people ain't got no time for this. My dad was like, hey, I was on the phone with him once about it. He was like, I saw something somebody said. I was like, wait a minute, that's my boy, goddammit. Like, he couldn't believe that it had welled up within him in that way.
That's great. That's amazing. I love that so much.
Real quick, I want to talk a little NBA, because I'm imagining that you're on the LeBron for MVP wagon. But, yo, Jokic, we have to talk about this boy.
Oh, my
God. It's just happening in Denver, but he and Embiid are by far the two best players in the NBA so far this year.
I thought Embiid had taken a slight lead over LeBron going into the All-Star break. I did think that, but Embiid then got hurt. And now, like, he'd already missed a half dozen games. And now if he misses 3 weeks, I think Embiid's going to be eliminated because he's not going to have played enough games. Right? Like, that historically, aside from Bill Walton, you can't miss that many games and win MVP. So then you have that. I just want everyone to understand, to recognize and acknowledge that at the end of this season, if you give the MVP to Nikola Jokic, you are signing up to feel dumb about it later. You know it. I know it. No one believes that Denver could beat the Lakers in a playoff series. I would argue people don't believe they could beat them even if AD never comes back in a playoff series, that Denver could beat them. And I think this is fair, Bo, because I had to listen in 2017 when LeBron James was the defending champion and the Cavs were awesome, that one of the things against him in the MVP case was the defensive side of the ball. And in 2018, I had to listen to how he can't win it because of the defensive side of the ball. The Lakers currently have the best defense in basketball by a mile, and Anthony Davis hadn't been playing. LeBron, how about this? I'm going to blow your mind here. Not only right now is LeBron the MVP, he might be the defensive player of the year. Him, Ben Simmons, Rudy Gobert. All of a similar argument. And Jokic is a zero on that side of the ball. He's a zero on the defensive side of the ball. That has to matter. It has to matter.
I'm with you in a lot of ways on this, right? And you know, I am not a devotee of the analytics, but I do have a value for like advanced statistics and what they tell us, okay? Jokic is putting up a win shares per 48 minutes this year that is like 2012-2013 level LeBron.
And he might have the highest PER ever, or one of them.
Yeah, like the dude is, objectively speaking, somehow, some way, the most unlikely development, A, that the two best players in the NBA this year are centers, and that one of them is the dude who can't jump, the dude who is not fast, but somehow is a 7-foot-tall point guard. The team's just not good enough in order for him to get this.
That's the other part, is they've got to get to like the 3 seed in the West, like they in order for this to be a real possibility. But I'm gonna add one other thing nobody agrees with me on. So Giannis's numbers this year are basically the same as he's put up his two MVP years, and he's not being really discussed for MVP. And would you say it's fair to say that's because we kind of collectively decided that his postseason flameouts after winning the MVP have disqualified him from winning one until he at least makes the finals? Is that fair?
I think that is largely fair. I also think that he hasn't been quite as good as he was the previous 2 years, but I do think that people walked in the door this year, and unless they won like 75 games, he wasn't getting it.
Right, because of the playoffs. Like, if he put up his exact same stat line and Milwaukee won 62 games, they weren't giving him the MVP. And everyone acknowledged that going into the season. So that's where I bring it back around to LeBron. If last year's playoffs can work against somebody, then God dog it, why can't they work for somebody?
You're amazing at this.
Why? I'm just saying, if we're going to say, oh no, Giannis can't do it because of last year's postseason, okay. Well, then last year's postseason counts, evidently. And LeBron was pretty good. He was pretty good in the postseason.
You're
so that's
brilliant.
All I'm saying.
That is an amazing turn. That is an amazing, amazing, amazing way to play that.
How'd Harden do in last year's playoffs? Oh, LeBron beat him. How'd Embiid do? Oh, they lost in round one. How'd LeBron do? Oh, they won the title. It's a regular season award for this year. What about Giannis? Well, he's bad in the playoffs. Oh, I'm just saying. People are saying that there's a little hypocrisy there.
Hey, man, what in the world is going to happen if Kevin Durant comes back and he messes up the vibe?
Okay. So, first of all, I don't think that the Nets have enough defense to get out of the East. I still believe that. I also think that Durant was playing as damn near as well as he's ever played, was awesome, and it's incomprehensible how good he was post-Achilles after missing that much time. But what I find so fascinating is, I think it is fair to say, Kevin Durant's number one goal when he was choosing what to do with this phase of his career, his number one most important goal was not, where can I most definitively win a championship? Because if it was, he would have stayed in Golden State. You knew you could win there. You had Steph, you had Clay, you had the infrastructure. Instead, he said, I want to win a title, but the context of it matters. It being my team and all of that mattered to him, which is totally legitimate. And now he has found himself in a spot where before he and Kyrie ever really got a month of basketball together, they added another guy like Steph, who's won a league MVP, and then Durant misses a month plus, and they're awesome without him.
Right.
And I just wonder if he set himself up for like a no-win, isn't that, because if they wouldn't have made the Harden trade, and the Nets won the title, no one would have been like, oh, super team stacked. They would have been right. Like, nope. Just LeBron's most important championship ever came with Kyrie as a number two and Kevin Love as a number three. KD would have had one with Kyrie as a number two and Joe Harris as a number three. Like,
right.
No, unimpeachable. But not only did they go get Harden, they've been so good without KD. It is just a fascinating. I just really wonder how he's experiencing the last month of basketball. Maybe he's just totally happy about it, but it is a fascinating subplot.
Yo, man, the dude was like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the Warriors. I'm going to win these rings. I went out here. I beat LeBron James in back-to-back finals. They'll say I'm the best player in the world. And we said, wrong.
Wrong.
You're not. And he's just like, literally, what else can I do? Because you're probably not going to win a championship in this day and age unless you got some real horses alongside you. Like, Toronto got it in large part because Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson got hurt, you know, in the grand scheme of all of it. But you going to need some horses out there. Like, we can't ask anybody. Like, very few people have ever been able to do it, like, as a one-man team anyway, right? There ain't no Danny Manning and the miracle situations going on in the
Correct.
NBA. Toronto is an anomaly for that reason. So he's never going to be able to be the guy that is actually in line with who he really is, because he's so good. He's always been so good.
Well, no, I think he's, you know, I haven't published it yet, but I did the 50 best players of the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. So Kareem to right now. And I had KD at 12. Like 12, which is, you could argue, maybe should be higher.
I said, that feels a little low.
Well, hold up. Can I give it to you real quick?
Yeah.
And you can tell me? LeBron,
mm-hmm.
Michael, Kareem,
mm-hmm.
Magic, Duncan, Kobe, Bird, Akeem, Shaq, Moses, Dr. J, Durant.
Yeah, now centers are a trick bag, right? Just because of what the game was and the priority and everything else. But I definitely
got him over Bird. Myself. Is that what you're about
to say? Oh, I've got him over. I've definitely got him over Kobe.
Oh, that's a tough one.
I think he's a better basketball player than Kobe Bryant. Now, Bird is an interesting one. Because one thing we got to remember about Bird, too, is Bird came in the league when he was 23 years old, right? Like, what his first 5 year stats look like on one level should be different than what, like, the first 5 years look like. But Durant, I mean, Bird didn't really hit stride until, like, year five when they traded his drinking buddy away. That's when he really got it. But Durant, I mean, we forget this dude's 7 feet tall, 235 pounds, and he is a shooting guard.
So, to me, these are almost different conversations because you can be better than somebody and still behind them on my pyramid.
Gotcha. I see what you mean.
Because you got to include, like, accomplishments
right.
and full
this,
career.
Gotcha.
I had somebody make the argument, and this is somebody that I think most people would consider, like, in LeBron's circle.
Uh-huh.
Make the argument that all-time NBA history, if all the guys are standing out on a pickup court at their apex, based on size, skill, ability, the number one pick would be Durant. That, like, he, it's like, wait, this guy's 7 feet tall, can handle, can shoot, can do everything you want as a basketball player. So, like, in as far as point being, as far as raw ability, right. you can argue Durant against almost anybody ever. I just don't think you can elevate him above some of these other guys who have just done more.
Yeah, I'm with you there, man. Damn, we got to wrap this up because we're hitting up on time. I waited too long to get to the NBA stuff because I wanted to needle you about the Super Bowl.
That's needle me, but that's what me. You get. You try to make me cry about Tom Brady.
That's what I was about to say. That's me being a bad friend and coming to actually interfere with the content. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Nick Wright. Check him out. First things first, mornings on Fox Sports 1. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing three times a week now, including Foxworth Fridays. Man, Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.